You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I am Joseph Silverzweig. How is everybody doing on this beautiful, beautiful December morning? You can't see the mountains, but the sky's blue.
It's freezing cold
outside. Oh, no, it's nothing. It's fine weather for a dip in the
guy from
Lake.
Virginia Beach is freezing. So, as well as his spouse from St. George. So, it's cold.
Who was the NBA player?
What?
There was an NBA player who tweeted about how cold it was.
It was probably one of the sissies from the Rockets.
Oh, man. No, it was like a week ago. But that was a really fun. I know we're not a Jazz podcast, but that was the only fun I've had watching the Jazz or following the Jazz all year. That was great.
You should watch some of the games.
It's hard for me to get through. I don't like basketball. But
well, look, before we get started on this thing, I got two things to ask of our listeners. One, is there these algorithms out there that determine how many people see our show on things like Stitcher and iTunes?
Right. You type in Utes Podcast. What comes up? Well, it's up to you. If you review us and you say this is the finest podcast in the lower 48, we will come up. If you don't say that, we won't. And we want listeners. I'm not sure why, but we do. We like you and we want you to listen to our podcast.
Exactly. We don't do this to listen to ourselves. That's for sure.
Well, Grant doesn't. I just...
Oh, okay. Apparently we need this for Joseph's ego plug. All right. Well... Nonetheless, go give us some reviews. And if you can't give us a 5-star review, please reach out to us. Let us know. Please DM me. I'm actually looking to – I have some targeted questions to ask current listeners of the show. And that'll be – I'll be putting out a link to those questions here shortly on Twitter, probably in the next couple of days. So keep a lookout. And we're just looking for feedback. We want to make this show better for you, the listeners. All right. As always, we're going to do our quick hitters. We've got a few things to talk about. And, of course, we'll review the Pac-12 championship game somewhat. Not much, but it's there. And then we're going to get into basketball, and we're going to wrap all this up.
I don't want to talk about basketball. This is going to be painful.
It's
15
it's not
minutes.
It's going to be as painful as you think. Well, it could be. But nonetheless... And then we're going to finish up with the Pac-12 in crisis and sending Larry Scott supportive emails. So here we go. Let's start with the schedule. There's some things happening. It's a busy time. Starting today, there's track and field at the Olympic Oval for time trials, if you want to go to that. That's all day. The Red Rocks preview is tonight at 7 p.m. And then, of course, we've got a slate of two rivalry matchups, men's and women's basketball. And after that, women's basketball, the next one after those games is the game against Weber State for women's. And then Kentucky men's basketball is coming up. We got some big games for men's basketball in the remaining non-conference schedule. And some success there could probably change a lot of people's expectations, but we'll get to that. So don't jump ahead, Joseph. I know you always want to. But the other thing to mention is that the volleyball team was eliminated out of the NCAA tournament, sadly, in three games in
sets.
A match. Or is it sets?
I think they're sets.
Sets it is.
Three sets. Three of the
Look,
things.
I'm not a volleyball expert.
Yeah.
We should... Never mind. We're not going to talk more volleyball because volleyball season just ended. Yes. But maybe we'll highlight them a little bit more next season.
And we like to talk about the other sports because they're interesting.
It's
I have a lot of
credit.
Fun.
I mean, speaking of giving them some credit, swimming and diving is ranked nationally right now. The team's doing really good. They've broken like 10 school records already this season. And so it's been a good year for swimming and diving. Women's soccer finished strong.
Yeah,
the volleyball team.
Good.
Went to the tournament. I mean, there's been some good things around the athletic department. And, I mean, ultimately, that's what the Pac-12 really cares about is all the Olympic sports. So we better highlight them, I guess. Yes. Maybe that'll get us a Larry Scott interview.
Yeah, we want a Larry Scott. We bring Larry Scott in interview. Studio here to the Salt Lake County Library.
Fly to Salt Lake, Larry. We've got plenty of questions
on
for you.
On your private jet, first class, you know, eating bonbons.
And then, you know, we'll fly to some nice resort with you. And yes. Continue
on your dime, maybe? Sound good?
Oh, yeah, bring the kids. Look, all right. We've got plenty of coffers with money in them.
That's true.
All right. Let's see. What else we got? Oh, and sadly, Olympic sports, but one the Utes are really good at, is there was a gymnastics injury this last week or so.
Cammie Hall, she was an incoming freshman who was expected to be a contributor in the vault and floor. She had a lower leg injury. And is out for the season, so that's a blow to Utah's national hopes. I think they're still probably Pac-12 favorites, but that's a definite blow. It's a starting wide receiver that has been lost before the season really kicks off.
Nice little football comparison for
you. That's what they're here for, right?
Which we will have the football comparisons on a score thing.
Yes,
once gymnastics season starts, those will be coming, but. And then there's always recruiting news. So what's going on here? Let me just get to the question people really want to know, Joseph. Jaden Daniels.
Nobody knows. I mean, there's been some bad news lately. There's also been some good news lately. We've got some staff and people close to the program who think it's hopeless. We've got some staff and people close to the program who think that things are okay. I mean, nobody knows. He's hot and cold. The key issue is he's got a split in his family over where he should go.
I didn't know that.
And that's kind of the core problem, and then it's aggravated, I think, by some of
recruiting methods.
Yeah, ASU's recruiting methods. The fight song says that our co-eds are the fairest, but I guess
they are.
Herm Edwards might disagree. So
cheaters.
It's well, you know, all's fair. Love, war, and recruiting.
It's definitely not all punishable based on the NCAA.
None of it
stance
is.
Of,
no one cares
law.
About anything. Oregon, I mean, I haven't read the details, but Oregon was just straight up cheating over the last couple of years. And they're like, you're fine. Just keep playing football. Doesn't matter. No one cares anymore. That's stupid. It's ridiculous, but what are you going to do? So, I mean, we're getting close, right? Signing day's coming. My big takeaway from quarterback recruiting and the level of panic over whether or not Jaden Daniels comes because of Tuttle's transfer is Utah acquired a solid Pac-12 quarterback this year. They converted somebody who we thought was a strong safety or wide receiver to a solid Pac-12 quarterback in Jason Shelley. And that makes –
I knew you were going to go there.
But it's true, right? We went into this year thinking Utah has two quarterbacks and a guy who's still playing quarterback but is probably going to wind up catching passes or breaking them up.
Right.
And he was good. I mean, I don't think there's a quarterback competition. I think Huntley will be your starter. I think Huntley may even start in the bowl game, hopefully, fingers crossed. I saw him at the facility the other day, and he looked pretty good. Looked like he hadn't lost any weight. He's holding his arm kind of funny, but that was 2.5 weeks ago now, so definitely on pace to be in playing shape by December 31st, I think.
Having that later game definitely helps getting him back, that's for sure.
So I don't think there's a quarterback controversy, but I do think that Utah has a solid quarterback and that he's going to continue to develop on the bench over the years, probably get more playing time as Huntley does seem to be a little bit fragile. And that's all good news. So they're set for 2019. They're set for 2020. And do I think that they will find a good quarterback for 2021 by 2021? Yeah, because every year that goes by, it becomes a more and more attractive situation. And I don't blame a quarterback for looking at Manny Wilkins graduating and thinking, well, maybe I can start there next year versus, well, here's this kid who looks like he's going to be a, Pac-12 all Pac-12 caliber talent, and he's a sophomore. I mean, what the heck am I doing? And not an NFL player, right? Like, Huntley's probably going to use all 4 years of his eligibility.
Agreed.
You know, and he might bounce around to the NFL. I don't mean to say he's definitely not an NFL player, but he's not a prototypical passer, and you don't see him leaving early because he's, you know.
Well, he doesn't have the build either.
Right. He's not 6'3", 225.
Yep.
You know, with a cannon of an arm, and the kind of guy who's like, yeah, I'm out of here because I want to get millions of dollars. He's definitely a college quarterback, and although a very good one. So yeah, I'm just not as panicked about it. I'm really focused on next season, on filling immediate needs, graduate transfers along the offensive line, graduate transfer at linebacker, we already landed, graduate transfer or JUCO, hopefully Quandre Mosley at safety. And I've heard rumblings that there are some really exciting grad transfers, like really exciting. And I don't have any idea who they are, but people who know who they are really excited about it. So,
all right,
I'm waiting with bated breath for those.
For all you recruiting people who like to follow it much more than I do.
Well, I think Grant has a very healthy attitude about it. You wait until signing day, you kind of take a look at the whole class, and you say, that's a good class. And you go from there, and rather than focusing on, will they get Jaden Daniels? What did he have for breakfast today? Who did he retweet? It's just not worth it. It's just not worth your energy.
True. So there was a Pac-12 title game last week, a week ago, today.
A good one. It got kind of panned nationally, but I had a lot of fun watching that football game.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about it before. There's a few different types of football fans, but there's the ones who, like, can enjoy a grinded-out defensive battle, which is probably a lot of Utah fans, because that's happened a lot.
You wouldn't still be a Utah fan if you didn't like those kind of games.
There's also the spread offenses, the air raid type offenses where people want scoring and some excitement.
And I don't fault a fan because those are the highlights, and you watch for the highlights. What bothers me is media, particularly media who, if that was the Alabama-Georgia game that ended 10-3,
right,
they'd be talking about all the NFL players on those defenses. And guess what? Washington and Utah – 20 NFL players between those two teams on defense. I mean, at least there might be more when all is said and done. I mean, these are wildly good defenses that didn't get enough credit. And what they did was they stifled two very good but not all-world offenses. Both Washington and Utah had good offenses all year, and they just ran into absolute buzzsaw defenses playing at the highest possible level. And that was the story of the game. And I just wish that those media members, rather than playing into the kind of offense-only trope, would try and educate fans to feel the same way about, like, a linebacker filling a gap or that Marquise Blair tackle of Salvin Ahmed. I mean, that was an amazing, amazing play that incidentally made Marquise Blair, like, probably $1 million because a bunch of NFL scouts were like, check – There's your starting strong safety. But instead of doing that and saying, look, this is just as cool as a diving one-handed catch, they paper over it. And that bothers me. I feel like you can teach fans to understand the game better, and that's part of the job of media. And so it frustrates me when I see them not taking the opportunity to demonstrate, you know, here's what great defensive line play looks like. Here's what great coverage looks like. This is special, and it's unique, and it's something that you should appreciate as a football fan.
Yeah, but, I mean, educate to a sense. But the media's thing is also to talk about entertainment value, and there just wasn't a lot. And sure, if fans were more educated or whatnot, there'd be. But when the only touchdown is scored on a fluke interception, and hey, look, maybe I shouldn't say fluke. The Washington player caught the tip drill, like, good
of
for him.
Of course you should. It was a
but
fluke.
But that should have been caught. Yeah. Mariners should have caught that. The nice, you know, they talk about the window with your hands, uh-huh, with those gloves, and it was right in there. It hit him
or at
on
least,
the sticky gloves.
Or at least hit the ground and not the back of his knee as
true,
he was rolling over.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. But I think that play identifies something that's both frustrating and fascinating about football is – the random element of it, because there were two interceptions like that this game. And people may not remember, but one of the interceptions, I think it was it Blackman or Guidry who came down with the tip drill interception in the first quarter?
I'm blanking out. Okay, I want to say Guidry because I know Blackman got the jump
right,
route.
Right, he jumped the route. He had a really clean, smart head interception. But it was just this crazy thing. It was a drop pass by a tight end. It bounced off one guy, bounced off another guy, and there was Guidry, and he caught the ball because he's a, you know, all-world defensive back, and that's what they do. They catch the ball when it's right in front of them. And the guy on Washington who caught the ball off the back of Mariner's knee is an all-world defensive back, and that's what he does. He catches the ball when it's right in front of him. And the difference in this football game was where on the field that happened and how many players on the other team were in between that moment and the end zone. Guidry's interception was in a big crowd of Washington players, so he went down. Right. And I think it was Henry. Henry's interception, there was 66 yards of field in front of him, and nobody could catch him because he had, you know, pole position, and that was a ball game. And it's crazy to think about the weird bounces off of knees and elbows that take place and where it is and who's on the field and at what point, like what position on the field is it in the flat? Is it on the, you know, it's just fascinating to me, that kind of chaos and how hard it is to predict what happens in a football game. And I think to Utah's credit, the expectation was, at least my expectation was this is going to come down to exactly one play. And what was cool about this game for me was the scoring was so low that you didn't get distracted by all of the sort of normal stuff that goes on for football teams to score. You were able to really isolate, this is the play that decided the football game. And what was interesting about it compared to other plays that didn't happen to decide the football game, like the Guidry interception. And I just love it. It's what I love about the sport.
Yeah, I mean, good. I mean, look, everyone has their personal preferences. I would have preferred some touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, you want, like, you're right, like, you prefer 28-31 one way or the other. But
I mean, ultimately, I would have preferred I'd be right and Utah wins. But I understand I didn't get that part. But whatever. I mean, it's over with. The Utes were battered by injuries. Covey, Moss.
That Covey injury was so important. That Mariner drop that led to the interception, that was Covey's route, I'm
sure
of it.
Yeah, but Mariner's a senior. Like, catch the ball. It hit you
in
the hands.
Yes,
like,
but
I just can't
that
buy
have been,
that argument.
That should have been 18 out there.
Sure, but
so
Mariner's a senior who should
catch the
ball.
When it's thrown to him, an accurate pass.
It was
great.
And it wasn't a bullet. Huntley throws rockets.
Right.
Shelley throws with touch.
Huntley leaves you know, with your fingers numb. He throws really hard.
Yeah.
A similar problem that Travis Wilson had, actually, where he just throws so hard that it's hard for these guys to catch it. Shelley does not have that arm, and he lays those passes in there, which has its own problems, but drops should not be one of them. And
yeah, like the one that was like over the wide receiver's shoulder. I can't remember who it was, and it hits the wide receiver right in his hands, and he dropped it.
There were some pretty unforgivable drops.
Shelley
there.
Throws that, and like it's just like – handing it to you practically.
Yes.
You should catch that.
Yes.
Huntley throws rockets where, like,
Shelley's problem is that the ball doesn't usually hit you at exactly the right spot. But
no,
when it does, you should catch it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the trick with these two quarterbacks. And as much as I know you don't think there's going to be a quarterback battle, I think there's going to be some kind of battle.
I think so. I think Kyle Whittingham's going to say, well, they're both good quarterbacks and they're both going to have an opportunity to earn the starting job, but it's going to be Huntley getting all the reps with the ones starting day one. That's my prediction. And they won't say that, but that'll be the truth.
See, I think you're wrong.
Maybe.
In the sense that Shelley just went 3-1, and as a redshirt freshman, he only had one turnover that was really his fault. Two other interceptions in this Washington game that were ridiculous. Like,
ridiculous.
Not on him.
Yes, definitely.
And that's it. Otherwise,
no, he played well.
His reads are pretty good. The run, he could run pass option improve a little bit, but that's Huntley's bread and butter. But he puts the money, he puts the ball
that's
on the
true.
Money with the right amount of touch so many times. So much better, in my opinion, than Huntley, who's throwing those rockets.
Huntley's
so,
completion percentage is about
they're about the same.
5% higher.
Okay, sure. He just got four games worth of experience. Yeah, Let's see what happens next year. What's Huntley? Huntley's a junior,
Red shirt, but yeah.
Huh?
Red shirt, but yeah. I mean, we'll see. You're right. Sure. He played well and he deserves a shot.
But redshirt freshman versus a redshirt junior, like, I would expect Huntley to have a better game, but he 5% completion rate, that's all you got?
Well, like, I have other things. I just feel like we should save it for spring.
Okay, fine.
We can brawl over it on spring. I'm looking forward to it.
Damn.
Especially if there's no Jaden Daniels.
Tune in April, guys. Tune in April. All right. So, basketball. This is an interesting time for basketball. So, they've played, they're halfway through, I would say, about the non-conference schedule. And they're meh. They're very meh right now.
I think I feel like that's a little generous. I feel like they've been sloppy.
Well, they're 4-3. When you schedule, I mean, what do you think about their sloppy play? Please inform me.
I think that they've played bad teams really close, and not the whole game, but particularly in the second half
defenses.
I mean, have really struggled, and it makes me really worried for when they play good teams. And so far, it's hard to say. And then I am as disheartened as anybody, I think, by the Vontae Hendricks transfer. Christian Papula.
Papula.
These are two very different classes of transfer, right? On one hand, you've got Vontae Hendricks, who's talking about. And everybody I've talked to around the program says that he's got some personal stuff going on that to them feels very sincere. But nonetheless, you hear that a lot, and then the guy pops up at, Gonzaga scoring 22 points a game in 2 years, right? So I mean, we'll see whether or not
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Whether those issues are, really, really sticking him down or if it's more of a facade in order to be able to transfer and get his release. I don't know. But benefit of the doubt to him, it seems like a personal issue. But those are the kinds of players Larry loses that are frustrating, right? His talented players who look like they can contribute right now. I mean, we were talking about him a couple weeks ago.
This is
the most important player on this team right now, but in some ways. And then he goes to transfers. That really stings. Papula, he shouldn't have come to Utah in the first place, I think. He wasn't really talented enough to crack the rotation. We had a game where we were playing 8 and 9 guys off the bench. And when I say, I mean, like, not the 8th or 9th guy, but like the 8th or 9th guy on the roster, right?
Right.
And he didn't get a minute. So,
yep.
He's not playing because he wasn't talented enough to play. He's a little undersized and no Bibbins when it comes to the outside and the ball skills. So
or Taylor.
I think they're very different. I don't think that you should look at that as a trend, because you got one of those players being the kind of transfer that makes Larry K look bad, which is he keeps losing super talented players because he's a hard ass with with personality conflicts, which would be fine if he wasn't missing tournaments, right? It'd be one thing if he was bringing the guys that he had left to play at a really high level, right? Like Whittingham squeezes, diva type guys out, and you're like, oh, I like that guy, but here Whittingham is with his meat grinder of a defense, and if he squeezes a couple of guys out because of the way that he coaches, you're willing to live with that to get the team.
Well, and results are there.
Right. Are you willing to live with Larry K's similar kind of meat grinder approach if the running Utes aren't winning basketball games? I think that's a fair question.
No, that's fair.
But Papula's not part of that conversation.
No.
He's a talent transfer. He wants to play basketball, and he's not going to play basketball at Utah.
And I don't blame him, by all means.
Yeah.
Go play somewhere.
Good luck, man.
I mean, heck, honestly, I don't blame Hendricks. If this isn't working out for him and it's a personality thing, by all means,
I'm 100% on the side of players absolutely every single time. Because they're not getting paid, and they're – putting their bodies on the line, and they can do whatever they want.
Yep. So it's interesting because, like, look, Hendricks is a loss, right? That's our fourth most efficient player, and stats-wise, he's, like, not very far for being our number one.
And so much potential. Like, had not yet peaked in terms of his potential.
Totally agree. And then you have players like, I don't know, man, Barefield has been really disappointing,
honestly.
That's
what we're waiting for. We were talking about this 3 weeks ago. It's like, when are the shots going to start falling for Sed? And that, I think, is the core issue with the team. And if that changes, which he's a very streaky kind of player, so it could change at any moment, the team changes. But we're still waiting.
I mean, he's the leading scorer, but he's just not doing efficiently.
It's efficiency, yeah.
I mean, it's hurting. So, I mean, we talked about the transfers. The Utes are 4-3, and they haven't played anyone amazing yet. Like I said earlier, Kentucky's coming up. The team down south playing those guys in the Beehive Classic. And then you've got the Nevadas coming up as well.
Yeah,
and for those of you who think I pronounced that state wrong, just go back to the East Coast and learn how to pronounce it. But so my question to you right now is, what are your expectations, Joseph, for the Utes the rest of the season?
So I'm not expecting them to knock off any of their premier out of conference competition. I think they're going to lose those games.
Okay.
I'm really up in the air about what to expect for the conference season, because the Pac-12 is a dumpster fire. There's one good team. ASU is the only good team in the Pac-12, and there's not enough data for me to know or feel like I know how teams are going to match up and how that's going to work. So I'm just waiting and seeing, and it's hard for me to make a prediction. I mean, I'll put my money where my mouth is here, but it's hard for me to see where the Utes go in conference play. And then there's still time to get better, and I feel like they're going to.
Well, there's a whole season. It's a really young team. Let's not forget that.
That's what I mean is this team is in particular is set up to have a lot of improvement through the rest of the out-of-conference season and to be a little bit of a different team when they take on their conference schedule. And I don't really know who the best team in the conference is or how those teams stack up, so it's hard for me to say, you know, they're gonna lose a ton of conference games. They might lose a ton. They might go 50-50. They might win more than anybody thinks they're going to in conference.
Okay. So I sent a tweet out yesterday in preparation for this discussion and asked people, you know, saying, hey, look, there's five more games in non-conference play. What are your expectations for the running Utes at this point? And these are the responses I got. So someone said five more losses, referring to the five more non-conference games. Someone's expectations is to BYU and Kentucky by 40 plus points. Someone's just hoping that they get hoping for a game on Thursday in Vegas. Someone's just simply asking for the freshmen to continue to improve. My favorite one right here was just to have enough players to field the team by the end of the time conference season comes around. And then just more improvement. So, look, this team's really young. I think there's reason for hope because the freshmen are proving to be talented. We just need to get them to play a little bit better. Specifically, offensively, second halves have been bad, like you warranted.
And I wonder if that's not – I don't know enough about the high school game. Are they a lot shorter? High school basketball games?
Good grief. You ask me. I don't know.
I feel like I've read somewhere that they're 40 minutes or...
That sounds about right.
That they're shorter. And so I wonder about legs in the second quarter or the second half with all of the young players on the team. And players who didn't come in, they're very talented, but they don't yet look like Pac-12 basketball players to me. They look young. They don't have developed... You know, they haven't developed the athleticism that I expect to see. And it's a little different for basketball guys because they're often slender. But still, I feel like there's more Pac-12 work to be done in terms of building the bodies and the tools that they need to succeed. And I think that banging around with college players really takes its toll on somebody who's been able to finesse high school players their whole career.
Yeah, I don't know. So my hopes or expectations of this team have changed a bit since the offseason when we saw who Larry Kay was scheduling.
He tricked us. Larry Kay tricked us.
Yes,
I think that's fair to say.
Big time tricked us. Sorry, guys. We were wrong.
Yep,
we were wrong. Change your expectations.
Our heuristic for judging the team was flawed.
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, let's talk about the upcoming BYU game, because BYU hasn't been great either. There's no need to talk about it much. It's BYU. But they did finally find their shot against Utah State this week, and now they're going to be playing the Utes on Saturday, early game. I think it's around noon. And the question is now, are the Utes going to win to give more points on the Deseret Duel?
It's all about the Deseret Duel, the most coveted trophy in all of sports.
In all the land.
All the land. I do not think they're going to win.
You're picking the loss.
I am picking the Cougs. And I'm let me tell you, my chest hurts just saying it.
What's weird is, for those knowing, he literally grabbed his belly and shook it.
So shook it like chest, a bowl full of jelly. Happy holidays,
my
everybody.
Mental image just put you in a white beard and Santa hat.
I'm a ways away. I've got to eat a lot
more. You need to get to work on
a lot more eggnog to get there.
Well, the beard, too. Got to grow that
out. It's impossible. You'd think a good Jewish boy like me would be able to grow a beard, but I look like a scuzzy fool when I try.
Well,
happy Hanukkah as well, everybody.
Look, this is either going to be a BYU blowout because they cannot miss a three-point shot, or it'll be a close one, and then it's a coin flip.
And that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting a nasty dogfight of a game.
I think it'll be like a 75-72 point kind of game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whoever has 75 wins, and because I'm exceptionally biased, I'm going to go with Utah, especially after the pessimism across from me here, picking a loss to a rival. But
I'm sorry, everybody.
Here's the thing.
That's where I am with this basketball team right now.
How they perform Saturday against BYU at Vivint Smart Home Arena will determine probably what I expect for the rest of the season, and could drastically change what I think they're going to do in Pac-12.
I think that's true. This is a good litmus test.
Yeah. It's like, if you're good, you're going to crush BYU, in my opinion, or beat them strongly. But if they're bad, like everyone is in doomsday mode, and they get crushed by BYU, then I'm losing a lot of hope for Pac-12 conference.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I worry.
Such a bad note to end on.
I worry about ULE Childs. I just think he's a really darn good player, that I worry about him.
I will say this. The great thing is Utah basketball might look like it might be bad. There's at least signs of hope. You know, it's young. Larry Kay has been a decent coach. We should expect improvement throughout the season. Not for the Pac-12.
No. Oh, my goodness. The Pac-12, and we're not talking basketball anymore. So this Costanzo.
Oh, nice.
We're not talking
basketball. Yeah, well, I mean, that's bad enough, right?
Yeah.
But the Costanzo articles come out, and they're brutal. And then you get the some of those Chris Hill quotes, and he calls for an independent audit of the Pac-12, which is a savage thing to do. You're starting to have Ruth Watkins. A couple of other presidents who are starting to break ranks and say, yeah, I'm looking at this. This looks like a real problem. So there appears to be enough noise and energy here that we're finally turning the heads of these people. I looked it up. Utah's budget is $4.4 billion a year. So it takes a lot to get Ruth Watkins' attention, right? But we've got it.
Well, when you mention her enough on Twitter, it's definitely going to catch
media person. What is going on? Nobody cares who I am. Let me read this article. And it was really well done. And then John Wilner,
Her tweet was really good.
Yeah, it was. I thought she did a great job. I think she's managing it really well.
Yeah.
And not setting expectations too high or too low. And
she's looking into it, people.
Yep.
And that's about the most you can say. Really.
But this John Wilner pulls out the emails. He broke a story with some emails, and they are just ugly. I mean, total Pac-12 in disarray. Too. Oh, hang on, we've got to drop. Wait.
Crisis.
See, Grant forgot that I recorded that. This is the first time we've ever used it.
Oh, my gosh, I forgot.
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it just one more
time. Yeah, one more time.
One more time real quick. I got it.
I wasn't ready for it.
All right, let's try it again. Now, where are you, little Pac-12 crisis sounder? Oh, no. Sorry, I'm not much of a sound engineer here. You guys are going to have
to. Well, we need to hire a new producer.
Hire one, yeah.
Well,
Pac-12 in crisis.
There it is! Yay! Pac-12 in crisis.
You finally got to use it. Congratulations.
So really, this is the best thing that could have happened to me because I get to use my little sounder that I recorded. but it's an absolute disaster. I am now a happy member of an angry sports blogger mob, which was cool. Nobody told me.
Sports blog.
See, nobody told me we were having a mob, but now I know I'm part of it. I'm really excited.
We're supposed to be an inclusive society.
Right.
And as a podcaster, I feel left out.
I'm sorry. We'll add podcasters to the hashtag.
Yes, please. I want that hashtag to be a mile long.
Yes, just everybody who's
my favorite part was Larry Scott's reply, hey, you know, thanks for the note. And sharing with the group.
Yeah, he's such. I mean, so I was listening. I was listening to 1280, which is a sad statement on Utah sports radio that I just don't listen to the other station. I was listening to 1280, and they said really resonated with me. The most frustrating thing about those emails was that they have absolutely no concept that something might actually be wrong.
Right.
They think, well, this is just fans being dumb, and they're not. Fans they have and media. Not. They have not.
We're all
once
stupid.
Done the thing that you should do when people are criticizing you and said, let's take a look at ourselves and be honest and ask, are we screwing up? And the answer is yes, a lot, big time, get it together. And they're not going to. And I mean, come
not
on.
Yet.
Somebody fire Larry freaking Scott already and change the rules that the athletic directors have control, because there's no reason to expect the presidents of these huge research universities to give a hoot.
Yeah, no, a $4.4 billion budget.
Right.
You're
billion,
exactly right.
With a B, who, why does she care?
Who does it actually impact? The ADs.
Yes.
The ADs should totally be able to fire Larry Scott, and probably would have already, but they don't have the power right now. I don't know how they change the power, but it clearly
it's
needs
just contracts.
To be
changed. It's not. I mean, it's just whoever the next guy you hire is, you hire him using the Pac-12 athletic directors, and you have the contract be at their pleasure. It's just a contract thing.
Well, there's probably bylaws of the Pac-12 conference and stuff that the Pac-12 the conference
but
like
can,
rules
but not
that they have
stuff
to follow.
To change, yeah. It's
but
not,
they have
I mean,
to change it.
But it's their own rules. So
right.
They can just change them.
Exactly.
Change them.
Well, let's change it. Let's get the guy out of here. Let's get rid. Let's change the Pac-12 network and TV issue. And let's win some bowl games.
And get some money. We're falling behind. Mike Leach was flying a middle seat and coach to do a recruiting trip the other week. Nick Saban gets a private jet that he flies to recruiting trips. And don't think the recruits don't notice which coaches are flying private jets and which coaches are flying coach. They don't call it coach.
Here's
because
my problem.
The coach is flying.
I feel like I'm in a catch-22 situation. And the Pac-12 is going into bowl season. And to restore some of the respect for the conference on the football side of things, the Pac-12 needs to win some football games. But if they win those football games, does it change the president's caring or the fans caring or whatnot and the heat that's on Larry Scott and the presidents right now? Does it turn it down too much?
So I think it definitely will turn down the heat for the fans, because fans want to win games, and that's what they care about most.
They want in the playoff.
They're going to be ticked they're not in the playoff, but this year there really wasn't a team that was playoff caliber, right? It wasn't like they were. Utes are probably top 15 team. I would say the same thing about Washington and Washington State. Not top four, though.
True.
Right? I mean, you wouldn't – my question for playoff inclusion is –
put in the teams that have a legitimate shot to win the playoff. I wouldn't say that any Pac-12 team, you would have said, is going to win the championship in a 4-team playoff with Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame, right? I mean, maybe would be – it'd be great to think about. It would be a lot of fun if that were the case and you know, we were getting to root for those games.
We should talk
games.
Playoff another day, but
– but, yeah.
That's a whole episode.
Yeah, but so the
– we're talking about keeping the heat on the hot seat.
I think that the president's – already know, and the presidents could care. I mean, if they don't care about the money, there is nothing Ruth Watkins cares less about when it comes to this athletic program about than whether or not Utah defeats Northwestern in the Holiday Bowl. And she probably doesn't even know what day the Holiday Bowl is. You know what I mean?
I bet she does.
Maybe she does. Maybe she seems to like football more, but I think
give her some credit.
But I think the thing to recognize about these is these are huge research institutions, and that the almost myopic focus of the presidents of these universities is going to be on their academic reputation. They don't care if right. the teams win or lose football games. It's a line item on their budget. They don't want it to be an embarrassing story. They don't want it to be making bad news. They want it to continue to produce some amount of revenue and not be negative. They don't want to be dumping money into it. It's on their radar now. It's a story. It's a bad story. And I think that the objective facts contained within the story are absolutely damning. And that
true.
That reasonable people in charge of an organization are going to be irritated that they even have to deal with it. They're going to say, this shouldn't be my job. This is a waste of my extremely valuable time. Why are we even doing this? Oh, it's because of Larry Scott. And I think that they are just to these people, he's like a gnat, and they are going to swat him. That's my expectation. I don't think it matters how the schools perform in the bowl games, because I don't think it matters to the presidents how the schools perform in the bowl games. I think it matters to them, is there a negative story about my university that's hurting my university's reputation at large? The answer to that question is yes, and the cause of that story and the cause of that hurt reputation is Larry Scott, and I think that's as far as they're going to take it.
Okay, I can buy that logic. I'm down. I mean, ultimately, I don't think they're going to do anything. I don't think Larry Scott even gets fired, which is the sad part. But
and that may be true, too.
That's my prediction.
But I don't think the bowl games move the needle one way or the other.
Okay. That's cool. I can dig that. Well, look, I'm much happier ending this podcast roasting Larry Scott
it's
than talking about the
always a good day to roast Larry Scott.
So, but
tear him
look,
down.
We are out of time. We talked a lot. And hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, you'd like to see us more in your timelines or in your searches for iTunes.
In your dreams, talking about Utes. No, that's, don't give me that, that look.
That's an interesting dream.
There we go.
Oh, man.
Grant's
dream
Grant's,
of Joseph
Grant's
in a
problem.
Santa outfit
Grant's a problem
drooling over Zach Moss's biceps.
Okay. All right.
Well, we got to end it at least a little bit more traditionally. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.